In the criminal justice system, the people are represented by two separate yet equally important groups: the police, who investigate crime, and the Crown prosecutors, who prosecute the offenders. These are their stories.
Law and Order UK. A busy London street at night. Grey-haired Bob and blonde Sally emerge from a cafe where patrons smoke hookahs.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Bye. Lovely meal, Dad. Thanks.
Come here. When did you grow up, eh? When did that happen?
Yeah, sorry about that.
16th birthday? 16 years old. Your mum would have loved to have seen you now.
Come on, let's find the car.
Sally looks puzzled.
Are you sure the car's this way? I thought it was the other side of the main road.
Was it?
Dad? What's that noise?
They frown as they walk into an alley. There's a fire at an upper story window.
Dad, look!
What? What is it?
A chair crashes against the window. Bob makes a call on his mobile. The fire service has arrived. The fire is out. A fireman vomits against a wall. Another pats him on the back.
Take your time.
DS Ronnie Brooks and DS Matt Devlin arrive.
You ever done one of these?
No.
You need this, Ronnie.
Right.
A uniformed officer hands Ronnie a torch. Inside the building, Ronnie and Matt make their way carefully up the stairs. The walls are black with fire damage. Ronnie blows out his cheeks. Matt covers his nose and mouth with his hand and coughs. Ronnie shines the torch in front of him as they move past a strip light, along a short corridor and into a room. Ronnie stares gravely ahead while Matt looks around.
God have mercy.
A forensic officer in blue examines a charred hand poking out of a white sheet. There's a line of bodies under similar sheets in the room. Images of London are overlaid by shots of the show's characters in action. Law. Square-jawed Bradley Walsh as DS Ronnie Brooks. Lean and handsome Jamie Bamber as DS Matt Devlin. Dark-haired Harriet Walter as DI Natalie Chandler. Order. 40-something Ben Daniels as James Steele. Pretty brown-eyed Freema Agyeman as Alicia Phillips. Both of them appear talking animatedly in court. And suited Bill Patterson as George Castle. Law and Order UK. Paradise. Teleplay by Chris Chibnall. Ronnie and fireman Jimmy Feldman.
Yeah, it was torched from the middle or bottom of the stairs. Went straight up like a fire up a chimney.
Right, and how quick did it take to catch then, Jim?
Well, for the moment the propellant was laid, about 3 minutes. Anybody up top would have been blinded by the flames. Oh, and fire doors were padlocked shut.
Nice.
The place was a social club, mainly used by the local Turkish community.
Which makes them Muslim. Racially motivated. Gotta be.
You know what, Jim? As a detective, you met a great fireman, mate.
40 injured. Serious burns. Central Command is setting up a casualty bureau, and we'll want liaison officers out in the local community. What's the number of confirmed fatalities?
17 so far.
Well, there's going to be a lot of people waking up to an empty space in the bed this morning, that's for sure.
And a lot of people wanting answers. We've got ourselves an official major incident. Now, these next few hours are vital, so you two get yourselves a head start by seizing every scrap of CCTV footage in the immediate vicinity.
Already checked. No cameras till you get to Edgware Road.
Oh, terrific.
DI Natalie Chandler turns to Ronnie.
Who owns this building?
Nobody knows, Gov, but as soon as the local authority offices open up, we'll find out for you straight away.
She looks annoyed.
You okay, Matty?
The club was called Chenit, Turkish word for paradise.
Who gets a kick out of burning people alive?
Ronnie and Matt arrive at the Whittington Hospital. Burns victims are on beds and trolleys. Hannah, a blonde nurse, shows Ronnie a clipboard.
Take to Sergeant Brooks.
Yeah, that's me. Thank you very much.
Is it the complete list?
Yes, sir, from here. We took the first 20. The rest went to the Royal Free in Homerton.
We've got Metin Dursun down as running the club. Where is he, please?
He's preparing for surgery. You better be quick. He might not make it through.
Mr. Dursun, I am sorry, but you said you threw a man out of the club for causing a row. What was his name, sir?
I can't remember. Mickey.
We're taking you into surgery now,
Mr. Dursun. He's... his name, Mr. Dursley?
Mr. Dursley, do you remember who this Mickey was arguing with?
Layla, the waitress. They knew each other. I think he was a monkey.
You have to go now.
Yeah. Mr. Dursley, remember her surname?
That's enough.
Hannah looks at a medical database.
You don't have a Layla on there?
I'd need a surname.
Well, that would be very, very easy then, wouldn't it?
I'm sorry, I haven't had the time.
Please. It's our best lead.
Nothing.
Are you sure? All right, well, thanks anyway.
Oh, no, wait, sorry. There are so many ward lists, they're changing all the time. Layla Bilgin, minor burns. One of the few lucky ones. Hinchcliffe Ward.
Brilliant. Thanks, you've been a great help.
Dark-haired Layla's arm is in a sling.
Layla Bilgin? I'm D.S. Brooks, this is D.S. Devlin. Now, how are you doing?
They told me people died in there. Do you know how many? Do you know who they were?
Well, not all the details are confirmed as yet, so...
Why would someone do something like this?
That's what we're trying to find out. We'd like to talk to your boyfriend, Mickey.
He ain't my boyfriend. Why do you think he's my boyfriend?
We must have got that wrong. We heard you to Barney in the club last night, just before the fire.
I told him to get off my case. I'm not interested in him.
Well, that's fine, but we would still like to talk to him.
What for? You don't think he started the fire? He wouldn't. He's an idiot, not a head case. I was at school with him.
We just want to talk to him, so we can rule him out.
Mickey's in custody.
Just tell me Layla's all right.
She's fine. 17 others weren't so lucky.
You're kidding.
He has a pretty female solicitor.
I'm sorry to hear that, man. I really am. There's some good people up there. Just tell us what happened in the club last night between you and Layla, Mickey. It was a row, that's all. You know, between a bloke and his bird.
Yeah, except she's not your bird, is she, Mickey? Layla says you're more of a pest.
Yeah, well, that's what she's like. You know, one day she's all flirting in the come-ons. The next she's all standoffish.
Right, so it makes sense that you want to teach her a lesson.
Don't be coming at me with that. Is that what you think? No way did I set that place on fire.
Well, the fire started at 11:45 p.m.
Ronnie sits.
Where were you then? At home, I suppose.
Any witnesses?
Wavy-haired young Nicky gives Ronnie and Matt a cocksure look.
Yeah, my Xbox. Nearly finished this game. It's taken me 5 weeks. I was playing the game all night.
In the street.
The kid's a right little chopper, but I don't know if he's an arsonist. I can't see him burning down that whole club just because of Layla.
Well, let me tell you. I was sitting in my kitchen one morning with my first wife. We was having a bit of breakfast. She's sitting across the table from me, crunching toast really loud. And it was getting on my wick. And I remember looking at her and looking around my kitchen and thinking, I could easily torch this gaff with you in it and me standing outside watching.
But that was a long time ago, though, yeah? You'd been drinking.
I only wish I had.
Angela.
Mickey's Xbox was in use around the time the fire started. Games saved on the memory card at 11:52, 11:59 and 12:17.
Yeah, but anybody could use that console, yeah?
The saves are password locked. Password's Mickey's middle name.
It proves someone was at Mickey's flat. Doesn't prove Mickey was.
Except I've got timestamp footage along Edgware Road. 9:11, Mickey comes running out the alley where the club is and heads home. Then cameras have him entering his building 39 minutes later.
Just about the time the fire was set.
Plus, he left 14 voicemail messages on Layla Bilgin's phone between 11:30 and 1 a.m. The mobile phone signal puts him at his flat during that time.
All right, maybe it was a racial attack.
No assumptions, Matty. We haven't got any evidence taking us that way yet, mate.
Briefing in 20 minutes, and I'm expecting a full progress report on everyone's areas of responsibility.
We'll be brief.
I'm Birsen Özkan. My son, Haroon, works in the club, Jeanette. He's 19.
She has black hair tied in a bun.
They won't let me bury him. They say he's evidence.
Natalie steps up.
D.I. Natalie Chandler. So sorry.
50-something Birsen dismisses Natalie with her hand. Birsen sets a clear plastic bag on a chair. She takes out a number of objects, which she lays on a desk. A black baseball cap, a pair of grey-white trainers, a red shirt, and a British passport. She takes out a framed photo of young Haroon, which she cups in her hands. Then she gestures to the other objects.
I want you to know. I want you all to see. This is him.
And this is who he is.
We're sorry.
No, I don't want sorry. 17 people like her. Find who did this. Please.
Burson's brave face crumples and she breaks down. Natalie gives her a sympathetic hug, and Burson weeps into Natalie's shoulder. Ronnie looks grim, and Matt turns away.
This case requires painstaking and thorough investigation. The police are making significant progress across a number of leads. We would urge anyone who has any information on this attack to step forward. Having spoken...
From forensics at the crime scene, traces of unleaded petrol, straight out of the arsonist's handbook.
Ronnie examines it.
How does it work and what is it?
It's stashed in the trousers.
Aye?
That plastic is the what's-it from an old car.
The what's-it?
You know, where they put the wiper fluid.
The reservoir, you mean?
You strap it to the top of your leg with a tube running down and out the bottom of your trousers. Mm-hmm. You wander about, leaving trails of petrol. Nobody notices until... Good night, Vienna.
How come you know so much about it, then?
I've seen it before, when I was a WPC. So, what have we got on the owner of the building?
The guy leasing the building pays rent to a company via a post office box number, which belongs to a holding company, here we go, with connections to multiple shell companies. God knows what that all means. I mean, it's going to take us weeks to suss out where that leads back to.
The nurse, at the Whittington.
You never let a woman get away, do you, son?
Very good, Ron. Keep him coming, mate.
Joke or cry, Matty, I know which one I prefer.
Anyway, a bloke comes in with second-degree burns. Then as soon as he's treated, boof, he's gone. Scarpers.
Something opaque is stuck in his leg. It could be plastic. The doctor wanted to remove it. The patient agreed. I went to see another patient, and when I came back, he was gone.
With a piece of our evidence stuck in his left thigh. Maybe.
OK. He sets fire to the club, but there are still traces of petrol left in that device he's got hidden in his trousers. As the flames go up in the club, they catch fire to that device, exploding that piece of plastic into his leg.
We're going to need that X-ray. Plus a full statement. I don't suppose you got his name.
I did, actually. Ben Musa, 43 Hamley Street, flat 2.
Fantastic. You're the best.
In ways you can only imagine.
Hannah gives Matt a saucy smile. Matt and Ronnie are at the door of Ben Musa's flat in Hamley Street, W2.
Please, Mr. Musa, it really is the quickest way.
You want me to pull down my trousers?
We're investigating a serious arson attack, which led to the murder of 17 people.
What's that got to do with my leg? Well, we want to see if you're carrying an injury.
And I've told you I'm not.
Look, mate, if you ain't got anything to hide, what's the big deal?
It really is the simplest way, Mr. Moose. Strides off, we'll have a quick look. Job done. I know it sounds a bit weird, and we ain't exactly in it for kicks either.
Crop-haired Ben sighs, then pulls down his jogging sweats, revealing a pair of spindly legs.
OK, nothing.
Happy now?
Yes, thank you.
Ben Musa pulls up his sweats.
Mr. Musa, a man was pretending to be you at the Whittington Hospital earlier on today. You got any ideas that could be?
It's a scumbag upstairs. I told you a lot about him.
Matt looks puzzled.
I'm sorry.
Listen, since he started squatting in that flat upstairs, the rest of us have all been broken into, OK? Last week it was my wallet and my passport. But your lot say they can't prove anything. Now, maybe you want to stop pulling my trousers down and go and sort him out.
Do you have a name of this person?
Yeah, it's Nazim Kassaba. He works in a hotel kitchen in Highbury.
In the kitchen of the Highbury Barn Hotel, a chef and the head waiter light a flambé.
Hey, signori, no one allowed in the kitchen.
Yeah, we're not here to eat.
Is there a problem?
We're looking for Nazim Kassaba.
Nazim, I'm not sure if he's here.
A waiter tries to bolt. Matt grabs him and Ronnie whips down the man's trousers. Nazim's leg is bandaged and bloodstained. In the police interview room...
Fire in the kitchen. Nazim, we know they haven't had a fire in the hotel kitchen for over 5 years. The staff have already told us that you were not at work on that night. So your alibi has been blown out of the water and you cannot explain how you got that injury to your leg.
And we've got CCTV. Of you. Running along Edgware Road 5 minutes after the fire was set.
Nazim, why did you do it? Someone let you down? Piss you off? Did they owe you money?
It had nothing to do with the fire. I wasn't there. The police doctor recommends that you be admitted to hospital for surgery. If the surgeon recovers anything from your leg, it will be given to us as evidence. We will accompany you to the hospital.
I'm not going to the hospital.
What?
Nazim.
Your leg is seriously infected. It's not going to get better on its own.
I know my rights. And you can't do anything without my consent. And you're not getting it.
Camera images of Nazim in the interview room.
Gov, as soon as that leg goes bad, we will get the blame. They'll probably search, you know that.
No DNA at the scene, no motive. 2 hours, 23 minutes to his next detention review. At this rate, we haven't got enough to hold him. Got to find something else.
Just been going through hospital records. 16 of the dead, 19 of the injured don't exist.
English, Maddie?
No papers, no visas, no leave to remain. According to Home Office records, they're not even in the country.
Ah, they're here illegally.
Just look at our friend Nazim.
All right, it's a connection, but it's still not motive. We're going to have to work on this fast. Get down to Edgware Road, see if anyone knows him. In the meantime, I'll talk to the CPS and see if there's a way to get that evidence out of his leg.
Nazim winces and nurses his leg. Ronnie comes out of a calf with a snack.
Here, Ron. Nice sausage.
Well, no one's talking about Cassava, that's for sure. Although the club was known locally as Where the Invisibles Go, wasn't
it? I don't know. The press will get hold of this, it'll go crazy. One illegal immigrant burns a whole lot of other ones.
Yeah, well, that's a nice bit of label, isn't it? Bunch them all as illegal immigrants, and you don't never see them as individuals.
It's not a label, Ron, it's what they are.
Yeah, but phrases get loaded, Matt, I'm telling you. You've got to remember, we're an island, mate. People have been coming here for years. Ended up breeding with the locals. We would love to kid ourselves otherwise, but like it or not, we're one big mongrel race, you know what I mean?
Result. James Steele's going to go see a judge about getting the evidence removed from Cassava's leg.
That's good.
I'll take this one.
James Steele in court.
My lady, the Crown's application is for an order to obtain a key piece of evidence we believe is embedded in the defendant's thigh.
Mr. Artemis?
It's a shameful application, my lady. The Crown knows full well that there is neither statute nor precedent which would allow for this kind of disgraceful interference with the defendant's human rights.
Without surgery, there is a serious risk to Mr. Cassava's welfare.
Oh, I'm not entirely sure that that's the Crown's first concern, my lady.
Until the Crown have this piece of evidence and a chance at forensic analysis, the investigation into 17 murders hangs in the balance.
Thank you, Mr. Steele. I don't intend to set a precedent which would allow you to force suspects into invasive medical procedures just because it might help your case.
My lady, this is a unique situation.
Which would compromise the defendant's human rights. I'm not prepared to intervene. The application is refused.
It's human rights. The murderer has human rights. What rights does my son have? Didn't he have human rights not to burn alive? These people played the system and you let them.
We're not giving up.
No, you're just playing games. You're not going to get us justice. We don't matter to you. We're not British. You don't even see us.
We do see you. We see your loss and your grief, and we will prosecute the person who did this. There is no prejudice in the law.
Talk, as all you people do. When you've done something, I'll believe you.
Well, looks like someone up there likes us after all. Nassim Cassava just got carted off in an ambulance.
Matt and Ronnie are at the hospital. To a doctor.
You all right? Sorry, family only.
He is a suspect in a murder case.
He's got septicemia from the injury to his leg. Now, who the hell let him get like this? Lucky to be alive. Can we have another large bore cannula and I want to follow it?
The unconscious Nazim is wheeled away on a trolley by the doctor and an orderly. A montage of images. Matt and Ronnie hang about in the hospital corridor waiting.
Thing is, even if whatever's in his leg is a match for the arson device, we still don't have a motive.
Well, softly, softly, sunshine, one step at a time.
The doctor comes out.
Run.
All right, Doc. I mean, that was in his leg.
You beauty.
Plastic.
Keeping you up?
In a lab.
Sorry, very long night. Tell me you got the results.
Polymer analysis of that evidence you brought in. Margin of error, plus or minus a couple of molecules.
Did you make a match?
Yeah. The sample burned into Cassava's leg was the same plastic as the melted remnants found on the floor of the club.
What, the windscreen wiper fluid thingy?
Yeah, the thingy. Must have been from an old banger. Estimated date of manufacture in the notes. No wonder your bloke got septicemia, though. The piece they took out of his leg still had petrol on it.
You just made a lot of people very happy.
Cheers, Teddy.
Matt and Ronnie stand over Nazim's hospital bed.
Brought you some grapes. Keep your strength up.
What do you want?
I thought you might like to know.
we're going to charge you with 17 counts of murder.
Nazim, who has cropped hair and a goatee beard, looks horrified.
Sure.
I have a representation from community leaders, grieving relatives. I'm reassuring the Turkish embassy. The DPP wants a quick result in this to prove that justice does not discriminate. It doesn't matter whether these victims were here illegally or not, we get a conviction.
Nazım Kasaba isn't talking yet. I need to get to his motive for killing that many people.
What are the local communities saying about him?
Nothing. We've got people in community centres going door to door. We've done appeals in the Turkish press, local radio, websites, but no one knows anything. Nazım was a loner who kept to himself.
What about a psych profile on him?
Came back with a glowing report. No sign of mental illness.
So why the hell did he do it?
That's what we're going to find out.
My client did not intend to kill anyone.
Then maybe he shouldn't have torched a building.
Mr. Kasaba was acting on instruction from another party.
They're at Nazim's bedside.
Listen to the charge to arson. No intent to endanger life. And you'll talk.
No intent. He walked around that club, spreading fuel, and then lit it. He was aware of the consequences. The charge stays at murder. But if Mr. Kasaba cooperates, the judge will take that into account at sentence.
Nazim glances at his brief, grey-haired, bespectacled St. John Artemis, who gives him a curt nod. Nazim swallows.
It was only supposed to be a warning. I didn't know that the doors would be padlocked. I didn't mean to kill anybody. It was just meant to scare them.
Scare who, Nazim?
I can't do this. You'll have me killed.
Alicia glances at James.
If I talk to you, you have a duty to protect me.
My duty is to the victims and their relatives. And if you were any flicker of a man, you'd stop thinking about yourself and start considering them.
Alicia stares pointedly at Nazim, who wears a white hospital smock. He seems to come to a decision.
I owed his people money. A lot of money. They told me if I do this, I have a clean slate.
Why that particular club?
It's the social club for the people that he smuggled over.
Who smuggled people over here, Nazim?
They pay in £5,000 for transport and papers, but this time when the people came, he didn't have the proper papers for them. He started to complain, threatened to tell the police about him. That's when he summoned me. Told me to send them a message. Make the people stop talking.
What was the name of the man who told you to burn down the club, Nazım?
I didn't mean to kill anyone.
Who told you to do it?
Nazim becomes distressed and is reluctant to meet James's stare.
College. At his college.
In George Castle's office.
London Businessman of the Year Award, 2 years running. Second generation British Turk, pillar of the London community with his own charitable foundation. Generous funder of community projects and member of several high profile boards. You mean that it is Coolidge?
Yes.
And you want me to believe that he's a people smuggler who's incited arson and murder?
That's what Nazım Kasaba told us. He's got no reason to lie.
And we're basing this on the word of a self-confessed arsonist. James, you are looking round corners when you should be looking straight ahead. A community leader torching his own people? What happened to this being a racially motivated attack?
There's no evidence of that.
Oh, for God's sake, but 17 deaths not enough for you. You want to pile something else on top of it? If this is true, you any idea how this will play in the Turkish community?
George, we're following the evidence.
Well, you're going to have to tread very carefully.
I know. Before we bring Kulic in, we need a watertight case.
Kasaba said that he used to meet Kulic in the back of a sports shop in Manor House. Apparently, he keeps an office there.
George frowns.
He runs 3 companies. He's got hundreds of employees. What does he need a little office in the back of a sports shop in Manor House for?
For transactions that don't quite fit in with the law.
We could at least take a look.
She gives George an earnest look.
And you really think that Kulic is involved in it?
Yeah, I think it's possible.
Right. Search that shop.
At the shop, Ronnie picks up a golf club. Bearded Turgay.
I never heard of a Kalich. You're barking up the wrong tree. This is a sport shop. Understand?
Oh, yeah. They're nice clubs, aren't they? Look at them.
Oi.
Hey, look at that.
Oi! Watch it! Oh,
sorry about that.
Yeah, it could take a few days to clear up after us.
Try and cure that slice.
17 people are dead. I'd hate to think you were protecting the person responsible.
Ronnie and Matt were smashing up the shop. Turgay glares at them.
All right. All right, he keeps an office out back.
Ronnie hands the golf club to Turgay while Matt and Alicia head out back. In James's office...
This is just one drawer from Kulich's secret filing cabinets.
Alicia starts unloading a cardboard box of documents and passports. James inspects them.
Immigration papers and passports.
God knows how many people he's brought into the country or how many of them are still alive.
Okay, so what does this give us? We're going to need to prove intention to cause serious harm.
Well, it confirms Kasaba's evidence that Kulich is involved in people smuggling and corroborates motive for Kulich ordering Kasaba to burn the club.
Maybe. How is Kulich managing to forge the documents?
That's what I was thinking. The same name keeps reappearing in relation to the visas. UK arrivals official name of Farouk Osman.
Are you sure?
Do you know the name?
Yeah, we were at university together.
At the UK arrivals agency in Paddington.
Hey, Farouk.
How are you?
Great to see you. Look, you've lost weight.
Yeah, give it a rest.
Hello, Alicia Phillips.
Very nice to meet you, Alicia.
You don't mind if we record this, do you?
Of course not. We're all friends here. Mm-hmm. Please sit down.
Thanks.
Thank you.
They all sit at Farouk's desk.
The victims who died in the fire off Redware Road, we believe they were in this country illegally.
Right, I see, okay. Well, what's the best way for me to help you? I can show you around our system. I can introduce you to some of the people who work here. You tell me what's best.
Your name is on these forged documents. They seem to have originated from within your office.
James hands dark-haired, bearded Farouk Osman a sheaf of papers. Farouk studies them and frowns.
Where did you get these? Oh, I see. Yeah, of course you can't.
Farouk looks confused.
Right, well, listen, we've got a couple of hundred people here. And I'll get onto this right away. It may take some time.
Sure. Thank you, Farouk. It's good to see you. Dig up everything you can on Farouk. See if he's got any business connections to Edis Kulich.
James, he's your friend.
So be doubly thorough. I want to know what the evidence tells us. What?
You're brutal. Surely any link is circumstantial.
No favours, no discrimination. We treat Farouk like any other aspect of the case.
And this has nothing to do with Farouk's race.
It's to do with the facts. They're from the same community.
So all Turks are crooks?
No, of course not. But look at what we've got. 17 corpses, people smuggling, forged immigration papers, and Farouk. We'd be mad to ignore that. I need to know if it's a coincidence or something more serious.
Newspaper articles.
Careful what you wish for. Your mate Farouk and Kulich with their arms around each other.
Where did you get these?
A Turkish London newspaper.
James reads a headline.
A meeting of minds at the annual Business Achievement Awards dinner.
Doesn't prove Farouk's involved with Kulich, only that they've had dinner.
Why don't we ask Farouk?
We think Kulich had something to do with the fire. How well do you know him?
He's got his arm round you.
Everyone in the Turkish community knows Kulich. He's our unofficial community leader.
Farouk's office.
James, this is a dinner. You know what happens? Everyone wants a picture with everyone else in case it comes in useful.
And did it?
James, what are you accusing me of? I think you better stop dancing around and come out and say it. You see me in a picture with another Turkish businessman? You think I'm corrupt? No. They're not like us, are they? Those men from the East, with their Turkish delight and their belly dancers, they're not like us,
are they? 17 people have died. Tell me how you know him.
How do I know him? He helped me get my first job. A recommendation, that's it. He knew a man and knew a man.
And that's it?
That's it. I see him once, twice a year, one of these dinners or fundraisers. He helps a lot of people.
Have you ever done anything for him in return?
Seriously accusing me?
You have a responsibility for immigration. You're photographed with a people smuggler who owns an office stuffed with forged documents which link back here. How would a jury view that?
Juries?
Well, in a worst case scenario, that's where this could end up.
You really think I'm involved with those people dying? You never change, do you? Relationships, friendships, marriages, they all come second place to you, your principles.
I need to be certain that you have no connections to Edis Kulich.
You know me. You shouldn't need to ask.
Please, Farouk.
Explain something to me. How can I prove something that hasn't happened? How can I show you evidence of a non-connection? How? I've never hidden anything from you. 20 years friendship, James. You really trust your own judgment that little?
I have to be sure. Help me be sure.
Farouk glances over James's shoulder.
Get out of my office, please. Out.
Sandy-haired, blue-eyed 50-something James regretfully lowers his eyes and turns to leave. He sits in George's office. Alicia comes in with some papers.
George, I've known Farouk since university. He spent years working his way up. I can't believe he'd be involved in this.
11.5 hours of combing through phone numbers, and I think I've got something on Kulich.
Go on.
Well, I asked police to look for CCTV of Kulich arriving at the sports shop in Manor House. Then I cross-referenced times and dates with the office phone. And I've got him inside the building while there's a phone call made to a Freddie Wall.
And who's Freddie Wall?
Suspected arsonist on parole from Ashbridge. He's just provided police with a statement that he advised Kulich on how best to start a fire. Even down to padlocking the doors. Apparently, Kulich was so concerned these people would go to the police, he wanted to prevent them from speaking out.
Right. Bring him in. Go and break the news gently to the DPP.
And I know exactly where we can find Kulich.
Club members at the Royal and Colonial Club give Alicia filthy looks as she arrives with James.
It's just like my local.
She spots Kulich sitting in a lounge. A waiter approaches.
Told you.
That's him. I'm sorry, sir. The club room is only open to members.
I am a member.
James Steele. I do apologize, sir, but you'll be aware of our rules governing...
Blacks.
Girls.
She bristles.
I think you mean women.
We need 2 minutes with Mr. Kulich. Your members will understand.
Balding Kulich is sitting in a green Chesterfield armchair reading a newspaper. He looks up as James approaches with Alicia. James sits opposite him.
Whoever you are, you've got a lot of nerve.
I'm James Steele, Senior Crown Prosecutor. This is Crown Prosecutor Alicia Phillips.
Kulich glares.
Make an appointment through my office.
Out of respect, sir, I'm making it look like I'm begging. But you have to leave with us. If you don't, the police are waiting outside. So which do you prefer? Sir.
Coolidge's eyes flicker worriedly around the room.
Mr. Kulich has never stepped foot into that building that was attacked, and he has no connection with the Manor House sports shop.
Tell me how we fix this, Mr. Steele.
Well, let's start with your connection to Nazem Kasaba.
I don't know anyone by that name.
Nazem knows you. He's pleading guilty to 17 charges of murder. And he's also signed a statement saying that you paid him to burn down the social club.
We also have another witness, Freddie Wall, who claims he advised you on the best way to set a fire.
Mr. Wall is a 7 times convicted arsonist and a notorious liar. Please tell me that this isn't really what you call a case.
You engaged Nazem Kasaba to burn down that building, and you told him how to do it. You wanted to send a warning to illegal immigrants who were challenging you for their papers.
Total fantasy.
Well, here's the reality. You're looking at 17 charges of conspiracy to murder.
Kasaba is a liar.
James, tell me why you're victimizing Mr. Kulich.
James sits opposite brief Michaela Herman.
I visited that club. I saw the marks on the bricks where people tried to claw their way out. I smelled the burned flesh. Then I went down to the mortuary to see the bodies.
This is all a mistake.
Kulich looks at James.
So how do we put it right?
By a confession from the guilty.
These were my people. You think I would do this to them?
Do you know their names, Mr. Kulich? Your people who died. Did you go to any of the burials? Have you spoken to the relatives or the friends?
Okay, James, that's enough. Your trouble is you're a zealot.
Yes, I never quite mastered the wipe-clean conscience.
The evidence of two arsonists, one of whom is an illegal immigrant, against the word of a respected London businessman with a history of philanthropy and community activity. I know who the jury will believe.
Michaela and Kulich go. George.
She's right. If it comes down to Kulich's word against Casper's, then you're in trouble. Kulich's barrister will just fill that court with stories about donations to charity and gifts to little children.
I'm going through everything that we have on Kulich.
It's people. That's what you need to find. Not technical detail, but real flesh and blood human beings who will get into that court and expose Kulich for the pond life that he is.
George, we've talked to everyone already. I don't know where we find that person.
Then you'll need to think about having an arrangement with Kulich.
That's not going to happen. Too many people have died. I have to look the relatives in the eye. I'm not deserting this till we deliver justice for the dead.
Couldn't agree more with you, but I don't see how you're going to do that. Castle?
George picks up his phone. To James.
You have a visitor.
I went back through my department's records. 3 years ago, before I was managing, one of our employees was dismissed for stealing office property.
What sort of property?
Indefinite leave to remain stamps for the inside of passports. I pulled out his personnel file, and his referee for his original job application was Adiz Kulich.
Farouk hands James an envelope.
Gerald Linden. The details are all in there.
This is fantastic, Farouk. It's just what we've been looking for. Thank you.
He's not Turkish. Apparently non-Turks can be corrupt as well.
I wasn't suggesting anything. I have a duty to investigate this case with all due neutrality.
Just about enough about your duty. I'm under internal investigation.
What do you mean?
You know how it goes. No smoke without fire. A visit from the CPS doesn't go well with my bosses.
Farouk, I'm so sorry.
No, but you're not, are you? You're not sorry. Not really. If it comes down to me and whatever case you're building, I'll always come second.
Kulich had 17 people burned to death. I have to look at this case from every angle that I possibly can.
I know, I know. I just never thought I would come second for some reason. How arrogant am I? No wonder your wife left you.
Let me get George to talk to your boss. Smooth it out.
No. The best thing is you and I stay away from each other. I don't want to be your collateral damage again.
Please, Farouk.
Don't call me anymore, James.
James looks apologetic as the angry Farouk leaves. Now bundled up in coats, James and Alicia walk along the Thames embankment.
My wife once told me I was too pious for my own good. Just before she threw a plate of toast at me.
You didn't do anything wrong.
I was so intent on not giving Farouk favorable treatment. I went too far the other way.
It's a beautiful thing, hindsight. And totally useless. Nobody else understands. If we're not completely impartial, we're not doing our jobs.
Does it ever annoy your boyfriend, that kind of thinking?
What boyfriend?
I thought...
James, really, that ended 4 months ago.
Oh. Oh, I'm sorry. I am officially rubbish.
She smiles cheekily.
Farouk will come round.
I don't think he will. And I don't know how I could have done things differently.
Well, we can't let his information go to waste. I'll go and talk to this Gerald Linden. It's our last hope.
Security guard Gerald.
That was 3 years ago. I've not had a decent job since.
How did Adiz Kulich come to be your referee?
He was the uncle of a mate of mine from school. I used to run errands for him for a while. It was him who suggested I apply for the immigration job.
And once you got it, he asked you to steal for him?
He offered me 10 grand to get some passport stamps and some headed stationery.
You didn't ask what he wanted them for?
He's not a man you ask. He's the man who tells you.
When did you last see Kulich?
About 8 weeks ago. He knew I was having a bit of a rough patch, so he bought my old car from me for much more than it was worth. A piece of junk, really.
Why would he do that?
Said he could always use the parts.
So, Mr. Kulich is a regular customer?
Yeah, one of our best. He's got a couple of nice Beamers that we look after for him. Couldn't do much with this one he dumped on us, though. But we took it in because he's a good customer. It's a waste of storage, really. I mean, God knows when it was last running. It's got parts missing all over the place. I mean, you can't even put wiper fluid in it because the tank's been ripped out.
A loose pipe in the engine bay.
The smoking gun. Or rather, the smoking wiper. Now, this is great work. You just built the case for us.
Forensics reckon the plastic used in the fluid tank on that model matches the plastic taken from the fire scene and in Nazim Kasaba's leg.
Why would Coolidge be so stupid as to do this himself?
I'll never underestimate the arrogance of the truly powerful.
Gerald Linden said that Coolidge was paranoid about people whistleblowing. He never trusted anyone to do his work for him.
He was right to be paranoid. The one person he trusted was Nazim Kasaba, who sold him out.
Well, at least we've got Kasaba's guilty pleas. But even with a case against him, I don't suppose Coolidge will do the same.
James and Alicia are at the Central Criminal Courts in their legal robes. Alicia's making notes. James rifles through pages and examines a bagged item in his left hand.
It's all because of this. The passport stamp, stolen from UK arrivals, the date had expired. That's why Coolidge couldn't supply the papers anymore.
But he kept taking money and smuggling people into the country.
And when they threatened to expose him, he had them burned. Incinerated them to protect his public reputation.
Oh, it's a shame Farrakh isn't here to see Coolidge in the dock.
I think he prefers to be where I'm not.
Sorry, James.
It's not about me. It's about the 17 people who died. Coolidge committed an atrocity. He has to be held responsible.
Alicia nods. Crown versus Coolidge, trial day 9. Coolidge is in the witness box.
Mr. Coolidge, how do you explain the evidence before the court from survivors of the fire who claim that you helped them come to this country illegally?
These are lies. Someone is trying to frame me.
And what about evidence from the relatives of the dead who say the same thing?
Lies.
And the evidence we've heard from Nazim Kasaba that you commissioned him to set the fire. Are all these people lying, Mr. Coolidge?
Any businessman makes enemies who want to see him brought down. Look at my record, my achievements. I only ever served my community.
You consider people smuggling at £5,000 per person a service to the community?
I only wanted to help them make better lives for themselves.
You betrayed those who trusted you, didn't you?
No.
You smuggled people into this country out of greed. Then you had them burned alive when they begged you for documents you failed to deliver.
No!
You were so incensed that these people might go to the police that you told Nazim Kasaba to, and I quote, make them stop talking.
No! I'm a man of honor, a man of principle. I don't expect someone like you to understand.
Coolidge glances helplessly at the trial judge. James looks impassive.
Mr. Coolidge, as a man of honor, how do you explain the fact that your prints and DNA were found where the wiper fluid tank should have been?
A court usher to the jury foreman.
On count one, the murder of Aaron Uzkun, do you find the defendant guilty or not guilty?
Guilty.
Count two, the murder of Bekir Murat, do you find the defendant guilty or not guilty?
Guilty.
Count three, Atilla Erdal.
Guilty.
Oruç Sunal.
Guilty.
Erkan Talwar.
Guilty.
Azil Tural.
Guilty.
Nazan Erdogan.
Guilty.
Alkan Aybar.
Alicia, Ronnie, Matt and Natalie sit in the public gallery watching. Members of the Turkish community erupt into cheers. They smile and hug each other as the blonde foreman gives the jury's verdict. They chant and point at Coolidge, except Bersin, who closes her eyes, clutches the lapel of her coat to her throat and mouths unheard words. She looks relieved. Then she glares at Coolidge, who turns away. The burnt-out building, the remains of a sofa, its metal springs exposed and devoid of cloth or wadding, peeling paint on charred walls, wooden chairs blackened by fire. Sun streams through a window. A ragged curtain hangs at one end of the frame, and a Venetian blind lies across the window's latticework panes. Water drips from the ceiling. The image gives way to the flame of a candle. The multicoloured lights of the busy London street near the building at night. A blonde woman walks past a calf. Bersin stands at a memorial to the victims and stares at the tributes of flowers, cards and candles. One candle for each of the victims. James arrives wearing a pale brown raincoat. He looks at her with sorrowful eyes. She turns to him and their eyes meet. She walks over to him and they face each other. She pats his chest gratefully. He looks down at her hand, then she turns and leaves. James turns to the memorial. The characters and events in this film are entirely fictitious, and accordingly any similarity between them and actual characters or events is entirely coincidental. ITFC Audio Description.